The Outdoorsman Radio Show is brought to you by Ellis Outdoors, LLC. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for the Outdoorsman Radio Show with your host, Alan Ellis. Hey, good morning, everyone. We're back again with more of the Outdoorsman Radio Show. We're talking about fishing and hunting in the great outdoors. In this hour, we're going to talk mostly about fishing. Our guest this morning is Michael Malpezzi. I hope I said that right. Good morning, Mike. Good morning, Mike. How you doing? Did I say it right?
You did.
Malpezzi. Good. The new artificial reef coordinator at the NR Fisheries Services, and just started a few months ago, I guess. We've had Eric Zlokovich on a few times talking about the artificial reef program over the last few years, and always done a great job. And we just wanted to introduce you to our listeners and have you tell us some updates and give us some tips from your perspective on the artificial reef program and how it's going.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks a lot. Yeah, Eric Zlokovich is still very much at DNR. He shifted. He's in the cubicle next to me now, and he's my supervisor.
I got it.
So he's been sort of training me up over the last couple months, and looking forward into the field season is hopefully about to start now that the weather's getting nicer, so I'll actually get out there and start deploying some reefs in the near future.
Good, good. We ran a little article about the reefs in the current issue of the Maryland Hunting Quarterly. I believe you were the author of that.
Okay, yeah.
And we got a couple pictures of the rubble going overboard at Taylor's Island, and we got the reef balls showing up at the Bill Burton Fishing Pier in 2014. So, tell me a little bit about the latest projects. Well, what's projected for 2016 and then work backwards?
Well, we've got a lot of stuff sort of on tap.
Right.
Something that happened just this past year is we need, there's a series of federal and state permits that are necessary to build artificial reefs. They don't let just anyone just go out and dump concrete in the bay. It's a somewhat regulated process because you're putting hard things in the navigable waters of the United States. So they want to make sure it's done properly. So these permits come up every 10 years for renewal, and we're currently in the process of getting them renewed. We have a couple of the state ones all done, but we're waiting on a federal permit before we're allowed to do any more deployments this year. But they're already, the work is sort of already starting to pile up. So we've had a number of marine contractors, a lot of them from the Baltimore area, contact us with material they can either donate or give to us cheap. And most of that material will likely go on the Love Point Reef, which is just off of Kent Island there. So that's an area that I expect we'll see a lot of material going into this year. We also have a few opportunities down around the Solomons area, so to the Taylor's Island reef that you just mentioned, might get a shot of material later on from some sources we have down there.
Well, anybody that drives the Beltway can see how much work is being done, and how much concrete's being pulled, and You know, it's not just the Beltway. I mean, it's there's a lot of construction projects out there that are tearing up this this rubble, this concrete that would make perfect reef material.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, and while we the main criteria that we have is that the so concrete is sort of perfect. It's obviously extremely stable. It's not going to break down in the bay. We just ask that it's clean. So if it was road material, we don't want anything with, you know, tar or
right.
oil stains on it or anything like that.
Right.
And any protruding rebar has to be removed before we deploy it, mainly so it doesn't snag fishing gear. Or potentially if you have a diver down there.
Right.
Sightseeing or diving for oysters, we don't want them to get hung up on anything.
Yeah, or taking the keel out of them.
So, exactly.
So yeah, of course. Makes sense. Yeah. But yeah, I was reviewing some photos the other day, and I was looking at the initial Maryland Aquatic Reef Initiative, the MARI program, the celebration of the acquisition, the first funding, and that was when the George Washington Bridge there in D.C. was procured. And,
You
know, I don't know if you were at the boatyard when that celebration took place, but that was back, I believe, under the Ehrlich administration. And there were photos there of all the participants and, you know, some folks that shall remain nameless. I think Ron Franks was the Department of Natural Resources secretary at the time. And, you know, some of the faces are still, I still see some of the faces, you know, at some of the events. And pretty interesting that I believe that was a $300,000 grant at one time to start that project. And it was, you know, it was a very, very exciting time because at that time we had one of the reefs had been planted and there was a diver had gone down and taken some videotape, and it showed the reef life after just a few years. It showed the growth on there, and I, you know, explain to our listeners, when you do develop a project like this, what your goal is, what you're trying to accomplish. You're not just trying to get rid of somebody's old concrete in the bay. You're doing it with a purpose. And what is that?
Right, exactly. Yeah. The artificial reefs that we oversee, they're fishing reefs. So the primary purpose for them is basically to provide habitat, hard bottom habitat, for fish, that the anglers in Maryland, can utilize as fishing sites. So that's the sort of our main goal. We're not part of the shellfish program, so we're not, you know, they're not oyster reefs.
Right.
They're fishing reefs. If oysters happen to grow on them,
that's a good thing.
That's excellent. We love that, but we're not doing it specifically for oysters. In the past, they have done, you know, they've put down bags of spat on shell and
sure.
stuff like that to try and seed growth, but they're not primarily oyster reefs. They're fishing reefs. So that's the big. The reason for the program.
Well, everything starts at the bottom up. I mean, you know, you've got to get the plant life started there, so it attracts the protozoa, and then you know the little microscopic bugs. They attract the bait fish, and the bait fish attract the bigger fish, and you know, just a food chain type of thing, and they've got to have a place to hide, and that's primarily what you're talking about. I'm guessing that, you know, you're providing a little different shelter and structure, and anybody that fishes knows you fish around structure. I mean, if you're a bass fisherman, you know that you're going to fish, you know, alongside all the logs and the blowdowns and that type of thing, and if you're, you know, you're looking for a certain kind of structure because that's what attracts fish is structure, and that's what you're artificial reef program is all about.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I mean,
exactly.
you look at the Great Barrier Reef, or you look at some of the offshore reefs that have all the life on them that, you know, that we like to protect. in our environment because they are so full of life, those structures of naturally made out of coral and things like that. But we're trying to replicate that with building materials and permanent structures in the bay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And there's, you know, the bay used to have a lot more hard bottom habitat than it does now. Back in the day, even going, you know, going back hundreds of years, the so-called sort of John Smith Bay, you know, there was, you know, less sedimentation and more oysters, basically. So you had a lot more of the hard bottom habitat, and we're basically trying to, add a little bit of that back, for, you know, it is really important habitat for a lot of different species of fish.
I just read in the last hour, this, assessment of the Conowingo Dam report. And showing about, you know, the sedimentation of the upper bay and all how much is backed up behind the Conowingo Dam and others. And this is something that you kind of keep your artificial reefs out of the way of the influx of the sedimentation. But how much does the sedimentation affect the artificial reefs?
Well, ideally that's something that we take care of when we do site selection. So we'd look at a new place to put a reef, we take that into consideration. Is this an area, where this material will be silted over in a couple of years, or not? So the idea is to put them in a place with a solid bottom, so you don't want to put them in soft mud because the concrete will just sink down right away. And you don't want to put it in an area where it'll, you know, soon be covered over. So we have had some of the older sites, and the artificial reef program is kind of a hodgepodge of there were some sites like back in 68 that were put in place with a little bit less care maybe, or they just haven't had material added to them in a long time,
and a little less science maybe.
Yeah, and they get a little bit, they can get covered over. Some of them are sort of legacy sites that, you know, there isn't much structure there if you go out there with a depth finder to try and find it. But that's something, yeah, that we usually try and work out during the initial phases. We don't go too far north. The northernmost we have is like up, sort of off of the Tolchester area,
right,
north of the Bay Bridge. So we don't go all the way up to, you know, like Turkey Point or something,
right,
like that.
Right.
The other thing is we don't want to sort of a Hippocratic Oath type deal where
do no harm.
First, do no harm.
Right.
So, if it's a seagrass bed or something like that, we're not going to try and start a fishing reef there because that's such a, you know, critical habitat.
Sure.
Same with oyster reefs. They do it. Before we do deployments, we'll look at the bottom to make sure that we're not covering up anything that's, you know, that's already useful for.
Sure, sure. Well, it's a tremendously large watershed, but when you start talking about areas, you know, adaptable to seagrass, and then you've got the silt that covers up a large portion of the flats in the upper bay up there. There's a lot of things to deal with when you try to determine site placement, I'm guessing.
Exactly.
And, you know, and are there plenty of places left?
We've got a couple places.
I'm not trying to be facetious here. I mean, I want to see the continuation of the program, but, you know, what do you got coming up? I mean, you know.
So right now we're focused. There are 21 sites in Chesapeake Bay that our permits cover, and we're mostly working with maintaining those 21 sites. That'll give us enough work to keep us busy for the foreseeable future. Most of the new projects tend to be that we deal with. Tend to be smaller projects closer to shore. One of the other issues, aside from sort of like a scientific or ecological perspective, is these are fishing reefs, so they have to be in an area, or ideally they'll be in an area where you know, it's easy for fishermen to use them. So, so that's another thing. We like to keep them sort of close to shore, you know, out of the, you know, out of the fishing channel so that, well, A, so they're not a navigational hazard, and B, so that, you know, it's not always fun to fish in the middle, in the middle of the channel.
Right.
There's a lot of traffic.
Right.
So those are other considerations that we have to take into account too when we look at the site. So, near, sites near major population centers, tend to be obviously very popular.
I mentioned earlier the Bill Burton Fishing Pier near Cambridge.
Right.
Was another project where you're putting, habitat, the reef balls primarily, in that area. And, we'll talk a little bit more about that. But, we do want to take a break at this point, Mike, if you don't mind, and talk about one of our sponsors, and then, we'll get right back to you and right back into it, and maybe take some phone calls if anybody would like to have a, ask a question about Maryland Aquatic, Reef Initiative, the, artificial reefs in the bay, and the success, and you know where you can fish them, and what you can expect. So I want to tell the folks about Clyde Sports Shop. As usual, you know, they are your fishing headquarters here in the Baltimore area, and they've got their once a year 10-day sale coming up. Starts next Friday, March 18th. Call it the Ready to Rock Sale, because all rockfish trolling baits and lures are on sale. And the trolling combos are on sale, too. They've got a nice Penn and Shakespeare combo for $89.95. And they've got a Penn 330 GT2 and an Andy rod, 20 to 50-pound rod with line. All those are on sale. That one's $139.95. You can wind new line on your reel. All you got to do is empty your old spools out, take them in, and Clyde's will fill them up with premium monofilament line. You know, the Strand and the Berkeley and stuff, and they'll fill them up in others from just 1 cent per yard. So just bring in your empty spools, and they'll put the new line on. It doesn't include braided line or Power Pro, unfortunately, but, you know, premium mono, you name it, you can get it on there. And you can go fishing this year just in time for the fishing season, that's for sure. All Shakespeare and Fluger rods and reels are on sale. All the ugly sticks are on sale. And check out their complete selection of St. Croix rods as well. They've got fishing licenses and rod and reel repair, plenty of live bait and hooks and weights and fish and tackle for perch and trout and bass and rockfish and everything for rockfish, the bucktails and the umbrellas and the parachutes, all on sale at Clyde Sports Shop. Ready to Rock Sale starts Friday, March 18th through Sunday, March 27th. And that 24-hour fishing hotline, 247-3474, 410-247-FISH. And if you just want to get in touch with Clyde's, that phone number, 410-242-6108 for Clyde's Sports Shop. Alan Ellis here for Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie spray-on bedliners. You know, Linex spray-on bedliners are rated number one and carry a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex spray-on bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust. Your tools and your tackle, crabbing, and hunting gear can't hurt your truck bed. Choose the Linex premium bedliner that looks great and offers UV protection, or the Linex Extra with Kevlar and paint match. And Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex now offer truck gear, the toughest accessories for your trucks. Step bars, tonneau covers, floor liners, grill guards, fender flares, and much more. These guys provide the best protection for your truck. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex bedliner and truck gear accessories. Catonsville Linex, located at 5617 Baltimore National Pike, inside Beltway Exit 15A. Call 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, located at 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie. Call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. Nothing is more frustrating than a dead battery. When your truck won't start or your boat or ATV leaves you stranded far from home, that's not good. The solution is Battery Warehouse. Not only does Battery Warehouse provide batteries for your car or truck, you can find marine batteries for cranking or trolling, ATV batteries, tractor batteries, motorcycle batteries, and batteries for all outdoors equipment. Did you know Battery Warehouse has batteries for wild game feeders, dog collars, cell phones, predator calls, and trail cameras? How about your video camera? Or if you tow your boat or trailer, your trailer brake control battery? Any battery you need. With 10 locations in Central Maryland, there's a Battery Warehouse convenient to you. Bel Air, Frederick, Cockeysville, Glen Burnie, Dundalk, Hagerstown, Westminster, Eldersburg, Parkville, and Woodlawn. Visit BatteryWarehouseMaryland.com online for the phone numbers and more information. When you need a hot flash, get to the Battery Warehouse
near you.
If you're a working man and your truck breaks down, you only need to know one repair shop, W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg. They built your reputation on getting you in, fixed, and out the door quickly, efficiently, and at a very competitive price. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles, large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Just look for that big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410. W&W Tire and Auto.
Hear this week's top newsmakers and a panel of expert political analysis on Fox News Sunday with Chris Wallace. Sundays at 5 p.m. on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
But I'll take down your fishing pole and meet me at the fishing hole. We may not get about all day, but don't you rush away. What a great place to rest your bones, and mighty fine for skipping stones. You feel fresh as a lemonade sitting in.
All right, we are with Mike Malpezzi, who is the new aquatic reef coordinator. Artificial reef. What do you call it? Artificial, aquatic, both, either?
Artificial reef. Maryland artificial reef.
Yeah, an aquatic reef could be. Aquatic reef could be natural rather than artificial.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I got it. Okay. The artificial reef coordinator, DNR, and we talk a little bit about criteria for placing a reef. What are these? We mentioned the concrete, and the rubble and that type of thing. The George Washington Memorial Bridge down there. D.C. became one of the biggest reef projects out there. I know there have been subway cars and things like that launched offshore and, that type of thing. But tell me a little bit more about the smaller projects, about what you call reef balls. What are they all about?
Well, reef balls are purposely made concrete or cement structures that are... Well, the ones we use are small. You could theoretically make them you could make them the size of a house, I guess, if you wanted to.
Right.
But they're dome-shaped. They look kind of like an igloo. They're
kind of like chicken wire covered with concrete, basically.
Yeah. So they have holes in the sides of them. It looks like an igloo with holes in it.
Okay.
So, they're good because they're hollow inside, and they've got some holes in them, so there's a lot of surface area for organisms to attach to, so for sessile organisms like sea grapes and oysters and algae and that sort of thing.
Right.
They have a lot of sort of nooks and crannies for fish to hide in.
So if you've got
a lot of good structure.
If you got one of those, cat igloos or dog igloos, and you drill some holes in the side, that kind of gives you the idea that the fish can swim in and out of that, and that they can, with the concrete structure, they're going to attract, again, plants and animals, microscopic stuff, and, maybe some oyster spat, maybe some type of sea growth on the bottom of that, which provides, again, a food for the little stuff, which attracts the bigger stuff, I mean, it's just natural, correct?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they're really they're popular because they're a good way for the general public to get involved. So
yep.
All you need are basically is a mold to make these things, it's like anything. You can if you have a mold, you can make one, or you can make 10,000 of them if you have the time. So. You just have the mold and you pour concrete in it and let it set. So they're a good way for, students or, nonprofit groups, to get involved.
Sure.
So you can slowly build them up. A lot of people kind of stockpile them until they have, a few dozens or up to hundreds of them.
Isn't the Maryland Saltwater Sport Fishermen's Association involved in some of that? MSSA?
Oh, yes. So MSSA is really interested, the CCA as well.
Yeah.
CBF deploys a lot of them every year up at Memorial Stadium Reef,
mm-hmm.
out of, sort of near Baltimore.
Right.
Every year that we're working with them, we expect to do another deployment.
So what?
I believe about 200 this spring.
Okay, so that was going to be my next question. Place like Bill Burton Fishing Pier or the Baltimore Memorial Stadium Reef. I mean, you've got this reef structure started, and you said you work to maintain it, to add to it, and that type of thing. Now, that's already covered under the permitting process, or do you have to reapply for all that? Anytime you dump one of these things overboard, do you have to have a special permit for that, or if you have an ongoing project, is it covered for a certain amount of time, or how does that work?
That's a good question. So, that's exactly what I've been learning over the last
year. Ah, okay.
So,
OJT,
permits,
huh? Yeah.
They come in, so once you have those 10-year permits in place, and they're not all,
okay, it's a 10-year permit.
You just started your own reef project on the side. You might get it might not be 10 years.
Like, right.
The time. But ours are 10-year permits.
Okay.
Once we have those in hand, we can sort of add to any of our sites.
Right.
As we want.
Okay.
Like the day of, we can't just go out there and not tell anyone and just do it. There are protocols to, you have to talk to the Coast Guard, because you're doing you're deploying stuff into the water.
Right.
So there's that sort of stuff that you have to take care of sort of like in the week leading up to the deployment.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's a big deployment or maybe at a site that we haven't added to in a while, we'd probably reach out, in some way to the watermen that would be local to
right.
the area to let them know. Hey, if you see someone dumping some concrete off a barge,
it's us.
It's legit. It's not just someone littering.
Right.
And also, we don't want to mess up their livelihood.
No, of course not.
Put concrete in a place where they crab or something like that.
Well, that certainly makes sense.
Involved.
Sure. But that was my question. You said 200. I assume that was 200 of these reef balls to be added to that Baltimore
right.
Reef. And that's what I'm asking. That's the next question. Like, I keep bringing back Bill Burton Pier because people know that. People understand mm-hmm. that, people in the central part of the Eastern Shore travel that that Route 50 bridge all the time, roadway all the time. So if I'm traveling from Easton to Cambridge, where's the reef in relationship to me if I'm on Route 50? Left, right, both sides?
So you're heading towards Cambridge.
Yep, east. Yep.
Heading towards Cambridge. It'd be on the left, on the plate. It's on the east.
It's on the east, so it's towards the coast. So it'd be on the left-hand side going over there. It's on the fishing pier itself is to the left, going that direction, to the left of Route 50. Okay, so that's the old road bed.
Right.
So it's to the left of the pier. It's out into the Choptank River, or is it between the bridges, or where is it located?
Trick question. I believe it's kind of both. Like there's structure on either side.
Okay.
I usually see when I fished that reef. I lived in Cambridge for close to 10 years.
Okay.
I went to grad school there and
right.
hung around afterwards. We usually fish like on the east side of that fishing pier when I.
So okay,
out with friends fishing
right.
that.
So you fish on the east side of the pier. That means you're fishing out into the broader, not towards the bay side, towards the river side.
Correct. Yes.
Okay, so
upstream, if you will.
But yeah, okay. So that's where the reef is over there.
Yeah.
Can you cast to it? Are you going to get hooked up on it?
No. Well, I mean, you can get. I mean, I've gotten hooked up on.
you can get hooked up on a lot of crap down there. I know that, but on the reef itself.
I mean, I guess you could get you could get caught up on it.
Okay. The other question is the other question.
Sort of. Kind of larger.
It's rough structure.
So hopefully, a hook will just slide off instead of getting caught, I guess is what I'm saying.
Okay, but the question is, has it improved the fishing there from the Bill Burton Fishing Pier? Can we point to that?
Is that yes, it has. I don't have data in front of me to support that.
Right.
But it's an immensely popular fishing spot.
All right. Well, that brings us to our next question then, the volunteer angler survey.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. I'll try and get you off the hook as much as I can here, Mike. I'm helping, not trying to trick you, okay?
Excellent.
All right.
The volunteer angler survey. So part of the there's this sort of founding document that we follow whenever we it's the Artificial Reef Management Plan for Maryland. So it's a document that kind of tells us what we should be doing and keeps us grounded as far as what our purpose is and all that.
Right.
A big part of that it calls for not only just building reefs. But also monitoring them and, making sure that A, that they work essentially, and B, that people actually use them, because they are primarily, basically for the people of Maryland, and anyone that comes to Maryland to fish. So we want to make sure that they're in an area where people actually use them. A big part of our monitoring process is this artificial reef survey, which has been going on for a few years now. And basically what it entails, volunteers sign up and go through a training webinar where we explain all the nitty-gritty details to them. But basically they agree, we pick a few sites, reef sites that we're interested in, that are also popular, reasonably popular spots to go to anyway. And they fish on the sites. Ideally, they'll go twice a month for the summer. So, it starts Memorial Day weekend and runs through last year's, ran through sort of like September, October.
Right.
However long you fish for the year.
Sure.
So we ask for 2 months, two trips per month. To the reefs, more is better, but two is fine. And if you only make it out once 1 month, that's fine too. And it's just you record how long you fish on the reef, you record what you catch, and any of your targeted species. So which usually striped bass or white perch.
Right.
We ask that you measure the first 10 of that species that you catch. And record all the data on a data sheet. This year we're going to have, you can either mail the data sheets in at the end of the season, or this year we're going to encourage people to just take a picture of the sheet and email it to me.
I got it.
We'll get the data as soon as we can. And then we ask for some other information too, like how much, an estimate of how much money you spent on that fishing trip, so we can kind of get some...
Right.
With some economic data on.
So where do I find this online?
Yeah. So if you go to the Maryland Artificial Reef Program site, which the best way to get to it is to just Google Maryland Artificial Reef, and it's the first thing that'll pop up, and that'll lead you to the DNR website, the Artificial Reef section of the DNR website, and there's a plethora of information on there, but there's a link to sign up for the volunteer survey, or you can also email me directly, which will save a step. But my email address is michael.malpezzi, my last name, at maryland.gov.
That's MALPEZZI. Okay, and if anybody, folks, the listeners know how to get me, ellis@ellisoutdoors.com, and if they want to, link with you, I'll be more than glad to share your email with them, but they just can do that. So I've got Maryland Artificial Reef Program, and Mary comes up first thing on Google.
Yep.
That's what you're telling me, and there it is. So I got the Artificial Reef Initiative, the committee, the reef plan, and then you go down the reef plan, Bay Reef Flyer with the MARI Index. So I'm guessing that tells you what, where everything is? Or
air
is that
the index? That sound, it sounds like that would be the spot that tells you where everything
well,
is.
Well, there's actually a couple here. There's the Ocean City Reef Chart. There's the Ocean City Reef Foundation. There's the Bay Reef locations with coordinates. And then there's the Ocean Reef locations with coordinates. And then the Cook Point Reef Ball site. And then there's a little video there on the Florida Artificial Reef Summit, but Eric giving an overview of the deal. And then on the left side, there's the quarterly, the reef project summary, the 2014 survey results, the 2015 survey training. And is that the webinar or what is that? No, that's a PDF.
Yeah, so that's for the webinar. So the training is the webinar is in mid May.
Right.
That'll be updated.
Yeah,
probably this week.
Yeah, I don't see that on here anywhere, but okay.
Yeah.
Very good. So, I mean, there's an actual page dedicated to this, but the easiest way, if you're interested in a subject or fishing on this reef or becoming involved, is to just hit that Artificial Reef Initiative or Artificial Reef Program on Google, and boom, it takes you right to the page. And then you can filter through all the written stuff, the plan, the flyer. There's a Bay Reef flyer. Let's see what that is. Oh, okay, very cool. So there's a map. Is it interactive? There's a map there that shows the locations of all the reefs, and with numbers, and it definitely just is very helpful to show you where all the reef projects are.
Yeah, there's a little, I don't know, I'm not looking online right now.
Yeah.
There's a pretty good map. It's linked to sort of like a Google Earth style map where
you can
zoom in and out. And it also gives some good information on, you know, if you click on one of the reefs, a short snippet of sort of the history of the reef.
Right.
You know, what it'll say, material first deployed in 1986.
Right.
You know, X thousand tons of concrete deployed in this state, you know, the bottom type.
And I'm looking at the artificial reef locations. It's a pretty nice piece that you can just print out if you wanted to.
Okay,
and it tells you Middle Bay, Lower Bay, how many acres, like Cedar Point's 155 acres. Gives you the GPS coordinates, tells you that it's a barge, it's concrete, bridge decks, and rubble. You know, the Cedar Point, and then Choptank River Bridge, Talbot County, Old Route 50 Fishing Pier side, Middle Bay, 2 acres. Gives you the coordinates, and it's concrete bridge rubble. And then it tells you more about it. There's another acre of concrete bridge rubble. So, I mean, it's great. It's a great little deal with the GPS coordinates on there if you're out on your boat and you, A, want to avoid these, or, B, you want to fish on them, which is what most people would do. So there's plenty of information there. Just have to know how to go for it and grab it, you know?
Yeah. And you mentioned the ocean reefs. We haven't really talked too much about
that. No,
them.
We haven't.
We work closely with them. The permits, it's like boring to talk about the permits.
Yeah, let's talk about the fishing action. That's the main thing.
Yeah, their permits are held by the Ocean City Reef Foundation. So that's the group that sort of does those reefs. But we obviously, I mean, it's artificial reefs in Maryland. We obviously work pretty closely with them. And then one of the sites on the artificial reef survey each year is always an ocean site, so it's one of their sites.
Right.
Bass Grounds has been in the previous years.
Right.
Has been the one we chose. This year it'll likely be Bass Grounds and also African Queen Reef, which is a little further out, but it's another pretty popular spot.
Is this popular with just regular boats, or is this popular with the head boats and charter boats, or both, or all, or what?
It's popular with both.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. So the man that sort of leads the Ocean City Reef Foundation, Monty Hawkins, he runs a charter boat.
Yep.
And I still haven't met him in the flesh, but I've corresponded with him via email.
Right.
Since my, I think it was my second day on the job. when he was when he.
I've been trying to get on the fishing report email list and haven't been successful to doing that yet. So you know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I mean yeah, it's.
He sends out some great emails.
Yeah, they. Yes, he does.
And he's an incredibly dedicated fisherman. And
yes.
He's very dedicated to artificial reefs. So he'll go out. He's a force. He's a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah, I know. He's big on the black sea bass and the tautog. I mean, he's all over that that program, and he's very outspoken. No question about that.
Yeah.
So, but that's good. Maybe we'll get him on the show one of these days. I think that'd be great if he ever gets my email. Hint out there, OU listener who is familiar with what I'm talking about. So, all right. Mike, we got to take a little break, and we'll be right back after this with more about the Maryland Artificial Reef Program.
Hey, Alan Ellis here for Bay Linex at Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex Spray-On Bedliners. You know Linex Spray-On Bedliners are rated number one, and they carry a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex Spray-On Bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust. Your tools, your tackle, your crabbing and hunting gear can't hurt your truck bed. Choose the Linex Premium Bedliner that looks great and offers UV protection, or the Linex Extra with Kevlar and Paint Match. You know what? Bay Linex and Catonsville Linex now offer truck gear, the toughest accessories for your truck. Step bars, tonneau covers, floor liners, grill guards, fender flares, and much more. These guys provide the best protection for your truck. Protect your investment, your pickup truck like I did, the Linex Bedliner, and truck gear accessories. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie is located at 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie. Of course, call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. Catonsville Linex, located 5617 Baltimore National Pike, inside Beltway Exit 15A. Call 410-455-0800. 410-455-0800. W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg has taken care of my trucks for over 25 years. Anything from a simple oil change to extensive engine work, brakes, tune-ups, everything, their motto is, we do it. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles. Large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Look for the big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410. W&W Tire and Auto.
Your favorite talk radio station is now on your iPhone. Go to the App Store and download the new WCBM app. Listen to your favorite host or program. Stimulating talk, breaking news, now on your iPhone.
At the tackle shop, I got a charge account running up nonstop. They ought to give me my own parking spot. I can't fit another plug in my tackle box. It's always under construction for all my weapons of mass destruction. I got buzz baits and Zara spooks, pumpkin seeds and flutes, booyah crawfish jigs. I got a 7-foot flipping stick, all the soft plastics to hook one on a Texas rig. My wife stays on me and my banker just told me that he's working on a tax deduction. For all the money I'm dropping on my weapons of mass destruction.
All right, we're back with Mike Malpezzi, who's the new coordinator for the Maryland Artificial. Is that right?
Coordinator.
Yeah, that's right. Mike Malpezzi from Maryland Department of Natural Resources Fisheries Service. And so we're telling us a little bit about the survey and that type of thing. So where do we leave off and how do you want to wrap up? You talked about a little bit about the ocean, but.
We just mentioned the ocean reefs. I can go over a couple of results from the kind of stuff that we learned from the artificial reef survey that we do. So the first couple of years, there's a sort of a pilot project in 2013, and then they ramped it up a little bit in 2014. The first thing they wanted to figure out was there's in the sort of artificial reef community, there's one of the things that you want to do is you want your reefs to perform similarly to natural reefs. You know, we're trying to sort of recreate a natural reef. So One of the things they had the anglers do was fish. They would fish for an hour on Memorial Stadium Reef up outside of Baltimore.
Right.
In the bay, and then they'd have them fish on Manowar Shoals, which is a large natural reef up in the same area.
So they do a little side by side comparison. So
exactly, yeah. And what we actually found was when they looked at the data, I say we, but you really mean they, because I wasn't working here at that time yet.
Yep.
But the Manowar Shoals and the artificial reef actually performed. They performed equivalently. They were there's no statistical difference in catch between the artificial reef and I should say the much larger natural reef,
mm-hmm.
Which is a good sign for us. You know that in that case anyway, that the artificial reefs were actually we're not just dumping concrete in the
right.
Bay,
yeah, I mean you're actually getting a result, the desired result. That's right.
Exactly.
Sure. Sure.
This past year in 2015, instead of doing the sort of side by side comparison, they tried to get data from more sites. So they did single sites, but they picked more of them.
Mm-hmm.
So they did the Memorial Stadium Reef again, and then Cedar Point down outside of near Solomon.
Right.
And also Love Point.
Cedar Point, I think that's the biggest one, isn't it? Or one of?
It's definitely popular.
Yeah.
I can tell you that.
Right.
It's hard to get with, as far as like sizes and stuff, because you could look at it via, area of the reef covered, and then also, or just, tons of material deployed.
Right.
There's a number of ways you can.
I was thinking that Cedar Point was the previously mentioned George Washington Bridge project. It was, quite some size.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. I mean, definitely one of the. I don't want to say the largest, but it's definitely a very major one.
Right.
and there's also some older. There's some older material at that site too.
Right.
They did, because they were adding to an existing site when they did that.
So right.
There were some I think maybe some shell was put down at some point, and some other older.
I think that was one of the videos that we saw initially. But like I said, this goes back many years. So.
Yeah.
But it's fascinating that we keep trying to improve the structure in the bay, to attract more and different species and increase the life in the bay, which, the oysters in particular, they're the filter feeders. They're the ones that clean the bay. And if you read about the life of, oysters, how many oysters there used to be and how often would, that entire oyster population would clean the Chesapeake Bay. It took like 4 or 5 days and it would totally overturn the water in the bay, and make it clean. And then, but we're trying now, this is, the initiative is for fishing, mostly recreational fishing, and tremendous effort and time goes into that and the permitting process and the, that type of thing. Plus, it's good for things like the construction industry and so forth, that they have a place to basically recycle some of the material that they're using. I mean, you can like asphalt can be melted down and made into other things, but concrete, what do you do with it? So we've got a repository for it that can actually turn it into something good. So that's a good thing. So
right, yeah, that's a lot of the marine contractors that I've talked to so far this year. It's really sort of. It ends up being a win-win for everyone involved. It's a good, especially if they're doing work, if it's marine, like a bridge or a bulkhead or something.
Sure,
somewhere,
sure.
And the material's clean, that, the material might already be on a barge even,
Exactly.
So, save them a trip to the landfill and it
gives
fish some structure to live around, so.
Sure. So how often do you get out on the bay, Milo? We're gonna wrap it up here. How often do you get out, Mike, on the bay and get to do some recreational fishing on your own?
Personally, not for work. I try as much as I can. I do my bay fishing sort of experience. I do a lot more crabbing than I do fishing.
Ah, okay.
So I try to get out. I lived down in Cambridge for close to 10 years, so. I didn't have a boat then, but I had a couple buddies with boats, which is kind of better than having
exactly.
Pretty much any place that's good to crab around Cambridge, or quite a few places that weren't so good to crab.
Right. So, do you get into any conflicts with any crabbers on the placement of the reefs, or?
We try really hard to avoid that. So for instance, one of our sites, we were proposing an expansion of it. I believe 95% sure this was Tillman Island. There's a reef off of Tillman Island. And we were, this is before I got there, but they proposed expanding it to the east. Towards Tillman Island. And the watermen in that area immediately, piped up and said, "Hey, actually we crab there." So we heard their complaint, and we nixed the expansion. We said we don't want to step on anyone's toes.
Yeah, well, that's one good thing. That's one good thing I will say about Maryland Department of Natural Resources. They do take a lot of time and a lot of effort to listen to the public on a lot of initiatives. In other words, we mentioned earlier in the show, the first hour, you've got public meetings and public comment periods. We had a waterfowl meeting this past week, and we have, the deadline to comment online on the proposed waterfowl seasons on the 14th. And then on the 15th is a deadline for commenting online on the proposed hunting regulations. And there's a public meeting in Hagerstown on that, and they're going to Hagerstown because they proposed, expanding the bear season into Washington and Frederick County. So Hagerstown High School is a good place. So it's it's a great. What is that music playing in the background?
It's not me.
Hold on. What do we do with it? We have to leave it play.
I can't hear it.
Well, the question is, are we running out of time? How much time do we have to say goodbye to Mike? Okay.